seeing them crumble, it like they just fell apart in front of you.
Somebody that something that can potentially happen to anybody who chooses to get married. And let's be honest, married people, like it's something that has crossed our minds. This is Rena D. Annabelle, aka Mummy Imperfect, and you are listening to the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect, a weekly podcast that celebrates and explores all things womanhood and motherhood. And here in the Sisterhood, we like to keep it real. And I know everyone says that, oh yeah, real talk and this and that, but no, this really is. I try and keep it unfiltered, talk about those things which are sometimes a little bit awkward, especially in the South Asian community. So I'm trying to just bring them to the forefront, talk to people who are strong sisters, who are game changers in their own way, you know. So today I'm going to be talking about the D word. Yes, some people think that it's a dirty word. It's something that is not easy and can be very messy. Yes, I'm talking about divorce, or divorce, as some of my family call it. So apparently 8.9 in every 1,000 marriages in the UK ends in divorce. So them's the stats, right? Like I said, it can be messy, it can be traumatic, it can be long and expensive, you know, but it's also something that can potentially happen to anybody who chooses to get married. And let's be honest, married people, like it's something that has crossed our minds, you know, at some point, like, oh, what if, what will happen? What about the kids? You know, I think you must be a bit delusional if it hasn't just crossed your mind at one point. So I'm happy to be joined by Bhavna Radia. She's a divorce expert and a family lawyer, also someone who's been through it herself. And she's also a mum of three girls. So I'm just going to talk also to Bhavna about, you know, flying solo as a parent, what that is like, because come on, you know, it's difficult, even with two parents. I know that. So, Bhavna, I just want to warmly welcome you to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here.
Good to have you. So, I'm just, like I said, I'm going to just talk a bit about what you do now and also just your journey as a parent, as a mom, and as a woman. So, you have three children. Just remind me of their ages again.
So, my eldest is 19, mm-hmm. and 16, and then 11.
Okay.
So yeah, different ages.
Yeah. So yeah, they're similar kind of age gaps to my kids, similar. Because you've got three girls, I've got three girls. So I'm kind of looking to you to reassure me that it's gonna be okay, that it's not gonna be hormonal hell.
Well, I can't do that. It is sometimes hormonal hell in my house, but we get through it. Gosh. We're a team. We always get through these things.
Yeah, that's good. And so how long have you been doing it solo? How long have you been flying solo as a parent?
So it's been 10 years for me that I have been a single mum, that I've been fully responsible for the girls on my own. So the little one, she was only 1 year old, and she's not known anything else. This is all she knows. And I think it's easier for them when they're younger because they don't fight this thing.
Yeah.
The older ones really struggled because they've lived with their dad. They've had that ideal of mum and dad together. Mm. But the little one, she sailed through it because this is normal life for her.
Is their dad still part of their life though?
He is, yes. He's very much part of their life. And okay. We are lucky that that is possible for us. And I know for lots of people it isn't. He sees them quite a bit. He sees them every other weekend and he sees them during the holidays. But then that does leave me 2 weeks where I am doing everything for them. I get a weekend off and then I've got 2 weeks of doing everything. So although he's there, it is still tough. You are still, as you say, flying solo. Our co-parenting is a bit different.
Because, you know, it's so different to be that parent who's like, oh, come on, kids, I've got you now. And then you can, you know, make a thing out of it. We're going to spend quality time together. Let's go to the zoo and all these nice things. Like, I don't know if he does that, but then I'm thinking about a lot of people I know who they're like, oh, I'm going to my dad's and we're going to go here and we're going to do this and we're going to eat takeaway. We can't do that all the time. You know,
no.
It's like, you know, and then you don't want to be the boring, strict parent who has to deal with all the everyday crap of like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to get up. I don't want to eat that, you know. And that's, so this is the day-to-day thing, which you are dealing with and he is not, right?
Exactly. So being that person, as you say, that is the boring person that says, brush your teeth and clean behind your ears and, you know, when was the last time you washed your hair or whatever it is, do your homework. So, you know, you have a routine when you get home from school, and a lot of it is directing them to certain things. Like, now you've got to do your drumming, and now you know. So I find myself constantly giving instructions.
Yes.
Whereas on a weekend, on a Friday night, every other weekend when they go to their dads, they're just like, oh, we're at dad's. We can chill. No one telling us what to do. No one saying, have you vacuumed? Because you don't have to do chores at your dad's, do you? You can just chill out. His dad's had 2 weeks to get up
to date. Well, exactly. He's not going to be like, oh, I haven't seen you for 2 weeks. Come on, get the Hoover out, kids. It's more like, you know, let's have a nice time, watch movies, eat popcorn and not have a bedtime and those kind of things. Maybe he's not, but I'm just saying, like, I mean, does he do that? Do they come back? Are they like going wild and then...
No, they don't go that wild. They're a bit older now. They're more likely to get up late. I think that's about what they get away with him. But they are relaxed. They are going to be more relaxed. I am going to give them a lot more to do. Life is a bit more disciplined for us. We don't do takeaways so much. We are eating healthy. And you've got all the chores that have to be done. So they have to get on with real life. That weekend is like a weekend off for them, but real life happens over the 2 weeks and I'm there to do it. But I wouldn't change it, to be honest. It's hard. I'm not going to say it's easy. Mm. And to all of the parents out there, whether they're mums or dads, I take my hat off to you, because being a single parent is tough, but there is so much joy in it. I feel like they give me everything. We are a team. I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah. But I do have, you know, days where I'm just like, you haven't loaded the dishwasher. I can't believe I'm doing everything in this house. You know, that sort of, you have those moments, but ultimately you're grateful. They're happy, they're healthy, and I'm able to move my life around to fit within what they need.
Yeah, that's a good position to be in. Mm. I mean, obviously nobody goes out there thinking, oh, I want to be a single parent. Like, you know, you went into a marriage and, you know, it didn't work out, and you're a single parent to the girls. But how long were you married for?
I was married for 15 years. So it was quite some time. But I you know, everybody, as you said, starts off with that fairy tale. You know, you think this is forever, it's going to be all lovely. We're never going to have an argument. It's always going to be perfect for us. And then you get married and the reality kicks in and things aren't like that, are they? We don't live in that fairy tale world. And it doesn't matter whose fault it was, why the marriage came to an end, but it is a difficult situation to be in when your relationship is failing like that. And the pain you go through in deciding whether to leave, whether to stay, whether, as we are taught to, is sacrifice, put up with it, do what you have to, because you can't break up your marriage. And I know that I had a lot of pressure on me to stay, because it would be shameful for me to leave this relationship. The relationship really came about because my parents introduced us. They were very keen on us getting married. We only knew each other for 8 weeks before we got engaged. So it was really quick.
Oh, wow, that is quick, yeah.
So I didn't really know him that well. But then after all these years, to say that I'm leaving the marriage, I knew that there would be an element of pressure to stay. And I put pressure on myself as well, because I felt that it wasn't the right thing to do because of the way society looks at it.
Okay, so that, it was 10 years ago, right? So... have things changed then, since then, or not? And is there still that thing and people look at you in a certain way because you're divorced? Do they?
I think they have changed. I think people now are thinking about, am I happy? Do I really want to be this unhappy person in a marriage and be, you know, let my children see this? Or would I want to be somebody who reaches out and you know, if they're unhappy, does something about it, as long as it's not hurting anybody? And I think that attitudes are starting to change. It's not perfect by any means, but I think we're moving that way. I mean, half of marriages are going to come to an end. As a society, we need to deal with it better. We need to make it easier for people if they've made that decision. And having that pressure to stay together in a toxic relationship can be worse than...
Well, it's an ending.
This is an actual ending of a relationship. Not that we're saying that everybody should rush out and get divorced.
No. I know. But then the other extreme is this whole, oh, let's just stay together forever when we blatantly hate each other. There is no love here. We're just kind of hanging around waiting until one of us dies. Because, you know, I know that sounds really harsh, but I'm not even joking. The number of people who are in marriages like that, well, you know what, maybe that's not fair, because to me they appear to be like that, but then maybe they have worked out some understanding between them where it's a kind of, they coexist, they function together, they do things for each other, but it doesn't seem like they're happy. And to be honest, some of them are quite toxic, and it comes across, you know, when you step into somebody's house. And now last week on the podcast, the episode was The Birds and the Bees, a Disney tale. And so we talked about, you know, getting any kind of talk about love, sex, marriage and things like that when we're younger, and how the lack of such a talk affected us. But also we talked about relationship goals, couple goals, people that we saw in our families or friend circle who we could look at their marriage and think, I want that. Oh my God, that's a beautiful thing. There wasn't really anyone. Like, I'm seriously, like, I am struggling to think who, growing up, right, who there was within my family or community that seemed like they liked each other.
Even liked each other?
Yeah, no, honestly, because seriously, like, a lot of these marriages, you know that, you know, they were very young when they got married and they just kind of tolerate each other. It was like a tolerating kind of thing. Or maybe they felt like, the whole not showing affection, okay, that's one thing. But I'm talking about looking at a situation and thinking, oh my God, this is just bad vibes all the time. And they have to say.
I've come across so many people recently that have been married. They're saying like 35 years and we've put up, but I need to get out now. I really need to get out. I need to do something. I've done it for too many years. And I think that it's becoming more acceptable for even people of that age to look at separating. But the problem is generally financial. We've been together for so long. How do we split our finances? I've worked for all these years. Am I going to have to live in a small little flat for the end of, till the end of my days, because I've got my family home? And I think the only thing that keeps them together, firstly, is children. Once the children have grown up and left, you've got no excuse and you're sat there staring at each other thinking, what am I doing here? Why am I here? We are, as you say, we're housemates, but we're not even mates. We just live in the same house. And they want to get out, but they just can't see a way of doing it. They can't see financially how they can make it happen. So most people just stay. They just stay and put up with it.
Like, I feel like in India, it's even one step worse. Like, even the middle class families that I know in India, that whole thing of getting divorced, especially if a woman, if you're not financially independent, you're literally trapped. You are literally trapped. It's like, I have to put up with all this shit because I don't have my own income. Or even if I do, it's not enough that I can go somewhere and live somewhere with the stigma. Like, either somebody else in the family will take you in, and sometimes even they're like, what are you doing, go back to your husband. So difficult. Like, I've seen it myself with people who are having problems over there. Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, how are you going to get out of this?
But when someone's got that much control over you, it must be terrible. You've got no, you can't think for yourself and you can't maneuver for yourself. And then that becomes even worse. Somebody having that much control over you, knowing that you will never leave. Can you imagine what you know they go through?
I know.
You can get treated so badly, but you cannot step outside the marriage. I think now it is changing, but it's not perfect. We're seeing so much of it, but the older generation are still saying, I can't do this. I'm unhappy. I've been unhappy for so many years, but I can't do it. I'm not doing it. And I mean, I was lucky that I was a bit younger. And I guess I'd been brought up here. And I thought to myself that, you know, I have to be a role model for three children. They are going to look to me to behave in a way that I will want them to behave mm-hmm. later. But if I don't do it the right way now,
yeah.
are they just going to copy what I do? Are they going to expect that this is a relationship, that this is how it has to be? And I was really lucky. I had my parents were very close and they loved being together. And, you know, I wanted to be that way where
that
they couldn't
do anything. That's so nice, though. That's so nice. You saw that growing up.
Yeah, I saw a really lovely relationship between my parents. And my dad passed away a long time ago. My mum was heartbroken. But I knew the love was really, you know, was there. And I did have other couples in my life that I looked to thinking, that's what I want. That's what I want. I want to be like that. This relationship isn't it. And I didn't leave. I didn't just jump. One day you don't wake up and go, right, I'm leaving. Mm. This is, you're tortured with this for years. And, you know, that whole thing of somebody thinking you've woken up one day and you've made your mind up to leave, it doesn't work that way. So when you've got auntie telling you, you know what, you just go back, you're being silly. I've thought about this for years. It's not I've woken up and I'm doing it. So actually, you know, I've thought, I've tried, we've tried to work on it, we've discussed it, we are unhappy. And ultimately, we are not good together. And therefore, I have to step out of this because my children aren't going to grow up the right way. Forgetting how I might feel, I have to put them first. And now I'm always showing them examples of good relationships and how, you know, you don't have to be mean to somebody to be happy. You don't have to be selfish, but actually you can be happy and it's okay to be that way. It's not a selfish thing. I think especially in Asian families, being happy is not something we want to achieve. That's not what our parents wanted for us. They kind of wanted us to achieve those money goals and the career goals. And once you've got married and had children, you've achieved success. But for me, what I want for my children is that they are happy and content.
The same. And you can't, that's not a guarantee. Like that's not just like, oh yeah, well, they're going to be happy and content and they're going to be doctors. You can't even guarantee that they're going to be happy and content, you know? Yeah. So that in itself is quite a big deal. Forget about everything else, forcing them to do this or do that, or, you know, it's, yeah, I agree with you. But that kind of like, that whole spending years being sad and unhappy with your marriage must have been really difficult, because like you said, you don't just wake up and be like, I'm going to get a divorce because I can't take this anymore, you know. What was that like for you, just taking that time when you knew this isn't right and I don't want to be here?
I mean, it slowly creeps up on you, that unhappiness just slowly happens, and you look back and you think, am I going to leave this? People are telling me this isn't right. You know, this shouldn't have happened, or we shouldn't be like this together. And I think other people could see it before me. But once I started in my head realizing that I'm not sure this is going to last, it is emotionally so difficult, because you are trying to keep it together. You're trying to keep your family together and piece things together. And then you do things that might make the other person happy. That doesn't necessarily make you happy, because you're trying to appease them, or, you know, you change who you are. One of the things I did was I stopped working, because we believed that stress was a big factor for us. So I stopped working. I became a housewife. I looked after the children. I took all the stress away. He worked and I stayed at home. And that wasn't ever something I would have wanted to do. I'm a divorce lawyer. You know, I was quite happy in my career. Why would I want to suddenly say, I'm just going to give up work? It's not what I had done all that work for. Mm. But equally, I'd seen what happened to people when they weren't financially independent. And I didn't want to be dependent on anybody. I wanted to be independent, but I decided to change what I was doing to help our marriage. But I think when you make these changes, it doesn't necessarily solve what you're going through. Intrinsically, the relationship wasn't right. And we'll keep doing these things to try and repair something that just doesn't work. But I did start getting some help. I had some therapy around my emotions. I was starting to talk about couples therapy to see if we could sort something out between us. But I do find that men generally aren't that keen on sitting down and talking to a stranger. So we didn't get to do that. But, you know, at least I was on the page of saying, I think we should do this. I think we should work on this. But I found it a really traumatic time trying to reach that decision.
And with the kids as well. Like, yeah. You know, the three kids is stressful anyway. It's nice, you know, as we know, but it is hard work. And mentally and physically, you are just drained. So then when you've got that also to deal with, I don't even know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can just only imagine what that is like. Because like, you are trying to keep it together for the children. And that's another layer of trying, right? Because I guess when you have the kids, you'll try for longer, right? Am I right? You try for longer than you would if you didn't have the kids.
Absolutely. The thing is, you will sacrifice whatever you have to for your children, won't you? That goes without saying. You will do what you need to do for their benefit. And for me, I was under that. It's in their benefit to be a nuclear family, because I put a label on, you know, what shame will they go through and what will happen to them, and will become dysfunctional, because that's what you become when you're a single parent, you're a dysfunctional family, and all of these things that went through my head. And, you know, and then they'll leave school and they'll have no qualifications, and then, you know, they'll probably, you know, be on the dole forever because of what I've done. And you make it this great big story, you know, you've ruined their lives basically. But this is all about the stories we tell ourselves. And we don't have to tell ourselves that story. The children will also have their own stories, but we can give them positive stories. It's how you see things. And I knew that I was seeing things in this terrible way until I turned it around. And I started saying to them myself, what will happen in a year's time if I don't leave? What will happen in 5 years? What will happen in 10 years? If everything stays the same, how will I feel? I would probably look back and think, why did I do this to myself? Why did I allow this to carry on? But also, what's going to happen to them if I stay? But what do they get if we leave, if we separate? They've got now two parents that are in tune with them. They've got two parents that will give them quality, and they're happy as individuals. It's got to be better for the children long term. I've now got rid of that whole, you know, we're a dysfunctional family. I don't care what we're called. We're a happy family. We're a happy unit. We're a team, whatever you want to label us as. And I do see those labels out and about all the time that, you know, people write, you're a dysfunctional family. And I refuse to accept that. I'm not dysfunctional. My family is happy.
Well, when I think of the word dysfunctional family, like, I know a lot of people who are actually together, and I would label them a dysfunctional family because of the way that they behave and how the kids are kind of involved in it all. And it's just, awful. So, yes, it's interesting, isn't it? The label that people put and the whole let's stay together for the kids kind of thing can be very damaging for the kids.
Yeah.
If you're not supposed to be together and you're not good together, you know, I've seen that as well. And I think with me, like, you know, like I've said, I don't sit there think with a divorce plan or anything. But, you know, let's face it, you know, people are just human beings, right? Like, I chose to marry my husband, and, you know, we're happy by the grace of God. But people are human, and I don't think people stay the same forever. And I think things happen, and I've seen things happen. So you kind of think to yourself, you know, if there's a point at which this is really awful and it affects the children, then it's not good for the children to be together, is it?
No, you don't want them to see what happens between two people when the love is gone. Some couples are able to carry on, and they're okay with each other. They've got some respect and they're civil and they're able to manage until the children leave home, but other couples can't. And I think it's that that will affect the children. It's generally, whether you get divorced, whether you stay together, it's how you behave that will affect the children. Even yeah. through divorce, if you can deal with it in an easier way, if you can not be so nasty to each other, you know, and you would have heard of all these nasty divorces that go on, your children will come out of it okay, as long as you are not battling and you put them as priority.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not talking about just general bickering and stuff, because, you know, we all know couples who really love each other, but they're bickering all the time. That's their way. Okay. Yeah. You know, and I know people who are the most, they look like the most lovey-dovey people, even like, you know, celebs that you see, like, oh, we're in your vows every year. And they're just like, everyone's like, oh my God, these people are couple goals. And then they're like, yeah, you know, we're splitting. And then there are people who you see and constantly bickering. But then deep down, they love each other, and they're literally, their marriage outlasts everybody. So I think that's a different thing. But when what we're talking about is that kind of toxic, unhealthy behavior and sadness, actually, isn't it?
There is a lot of sadness, especially when you realize that this is going to happen. And it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get the strength to leave. Once you have realized, it is so difficult, so painful. And, you know, what I would say is that making that decision is tough, but start building yourself up, start getting stronger, start really working on yourself, because you're going to need that strength to get through. But remember, it is a journey, because you're going to come out of the other side. You will be okay, but you need to build up the strength and the resources to be able to get through.
Right. So you specialize in divorce. You're a lawyer that specializes in divorce. So divorce expert. How expensive is this? And is that one of the things that puts people off as well?
It is. That is almost the first question that I'm going to get asked. Once they've told me their story, how much is this going to cost? And I get that. I really, you know, I know that people at that stage don't have the money to put towards lawyers, because you've got one home, you've got X amount of savings, whatever it is, you've got two cars, and you've got to split that into two. You've got to split that home and buy two, possibly, or, you know, one person needs to move somewhere else. And that isn't going to be cheap. So money is the biggest factor for most couples. And so, yes, it's the biggest thing. The average cost of divorce in the UK is £18,000 each.
Wow.
So that's almost £40,000. That is a lot. I find it horrendous that that's the cost. But then I know people that have spent £80,000 each or £90,000 each. And obviously that can go upwards.
That's insane.
It is insane. I mean, you could buy a house with that money for your children.
Yeah. That's great. So you can't even get away from someone without being broke at the end of it. Like, it's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. But I do think the system just doesn't work for people. It doesn't work for families, because you're almost expected to fight. And you shouldn't be fighting. You're a family that is just changing the dynamics, and you shouldn't be expected to battle it out. But the legal system is sort of set up that way. And it is slowly changing. There's lots of new people coming in with different ideas, and things are starting to change. But something like that takes years to change. So people are faced with massive legal bills. And I know when I went through it, I was lucky I could do it myself. But for my ex-husband, it must be really tough when you're divorcing a divorce lawyer. He must have really struggled with that. And I did. I felt for him, because he would ask me questions and I'd be answering them. And some part of me would think, I hope he trusts my answer, because I'm being fair. I'm telling you honestly. But wow, it must. He was on the back foot, wasn't he? And we decided that we wouldn't go to lawyers. So he was kind of reliant on me being fair. And luckily, he's a clever bloke. He could see it if I was pulling the wool over his eyes. But we didn't have those expenses. But can you imagine for these people that suddenly, you know, they need to find £20,000 almost? Where are you going to get that from? So, yes, it's really expensive. And I find that a lot of people will stay because they don't know how to split their house and their cars and everything else. but they haven't got the money to do this. They just haven't got the money. Like, that's crazy that you have to spend so much on sort of separating yourselves.
Yeah, because people say that, oh, marriage is really expensive, but then this is like, this could end up costing more than a marriage, right? A wedding.
Yeah. And can you imagine if you've been married a year or something, you've spent 40,000 on the wedding and then you're spending 40,000 on your divorce. It's nuts.
So, and is that the minimum then? That's the minimum?
No, that's the average.
Okay.
You can do a lot of it yourself. And that is almost what I'm about. I'm saying to people, do it yourselves. Keep your money in your pocket. Don't spend it on lawyers. You know, empower yourself. This is your situation. Get to grips with it. Find out how you could do it. And there is support out there for you. And so I'm a big believer in empowering people and making them feel confident around their own situation. But, you know, the first thing people do is they'll contact a solicitor and say, do it for me. But actually, I will say, take a step back. Let me show you how. It's quite simple, some of it. You can do it yourself. Let's work it out. And actually, it doesn't have to be expensive then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you say do it yourself, what exactly are they doing themselves? Like seeing how much many assets they've got and how to split it, that kind of thing?
Well, the divorce process, the actual ending of the marriage isn't so complicated now. There is a whole aspect of doing it in a simpler way where actually the court expects you to do it yourself. It's fine for you to actually go through and do that yourself.
Okay.
The finances are where most people struggle. So that is the more complex area, and people can't always see a way of getting to a solution around the finances. But actually, there's steps that you can take that will get you very close to that. And if you can't get to a solution, you could employ somebody for an hour or two. So you buy in the help you need around negotiation, possibly, to help you, rather than saying, just do it all for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you encourage people to, like people who are thinking about getting married, to get prenups? Is prenups a thing that is just, is it like a rich people bougie thing, or is it a normal average people thing, and should people get it to kind of just in case, you know?
They're not legally binding in the UK, not right. In the way they are in the US.
Mm-hmm.
But I would still say that you should get one, because what it does is it makes you think about what would you do when you're married if your relationship failed, and you know what would happen. It's like almost like a commercial transaction. Then you have thought about these things beforehand. Like if somebody comes into the marriage with a house already, should that house then be included? If they've had that house for 20 years, should they have to share that house? These questions are things that you would have thought about. But you have to bear in mind that if you have children together, things are different. That agreement that you've got wouldn't be held, because the children will come first. And if that house that, you know, one person has had for 20 years needs to be used to house the children, it needs to be used to house the children. They are priority. But that agreement is used as kind of your intentions when you started out. So it is useful for that purpose. What did you both intend to do? And I think it makes people think about things clearly before the emotions kick in. And at the end, if you've got children, if your lives have changed, one of you has got health difficulties, then you can still change what you agreed. So it's flexible. And I think that actually having it flexible is kind of a good thing, because your lives may change. If you're married 20 years, things may be different in that time. So I like the flexibility of it, but I also like the fact that you've thought things over. But you do have to do it properly. If you are going to get a prenup, do use a solicitor to do it, or a legal professional, because often if you don't do it properly, they won't be legally binding anyway. Mm-hmm. Even a judge is going to say, we're not relying on that at all. We're not even going to look at it, because it wasn't done properly.
Right. gosh, so complicated, isn't it?
Very complicated.
And you know, like, it's so sad, you know, when you see people who were in love, and obviously that's where they got married, and then when they're splitting, it's like, well, I want this and I want that and I'm entitled to this, and it just gets so nasty, doesn't it? Like, does that happen in most of the cases?
I would say most, not all. Some people that I work with, and I work with couples as well, they come to me and they say, we want to reduce hostility, we want to reduce costs, and we want to be good co-parents. And they start off there. And I'm like, brilliant, you know, this couple have got the right mindset. We're going into this in the right way. And then you start talking about money. And that's where things start getting a little bit difficult. Like, but you left me, why should you get an equal amount? Well, just because one person left you, that doesn't mean they'll get less. Or you had an affair, so you should get less. And you think, no, that's not relevant. You know, why the marriage ended generally isn't looked at. The way we look at this is, what do you need? Not why did it come to an end, or did she treat you badly, or did he have an, whatever it is that their story is. Mm-hmm. And I say to them constantly, you have to put your backstory away. Because if you keep saying, but he's like this, and he always does this, and she's always doing that, you just complicate things. You need to kind of look forward. What is the solution for you guys as a family to get through this? And we have to find something that's fair, but also equally works for you all.
What about this whole thing of, like, you know, somebody's husband that they're separated with and they're trying to divorce can come around the house and go around with a clipboard looking at every single thing that's worth that much? I'm having that. Or I've heard of people doing that. Is that a thing? Is that a thing to go around assessing how much every single thing is worth?
You should only really value things that are over £500, because you'll be there forever. But I have known, and I have dealt with couples that count every cushion. They have counted the cups, and they've counted the printer, and they've, you know, and they've done a list, and their list is pages and pages. And then we've sat down together and said, who's having the vase, and who's having the, you know, tea set, and who's having, and they literally get so, I want the green cushions. No, I want the green ones. And you think, seriously? Honestly, you know, life has got to be bigger than this. And even for me sitting there listening to it, I just think, what am I doing here? But they desperately fight over every small thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm one of these people that would just say, have it. You know, honestly, I'm not going to fight over these things. And it's costing you money to fight. Why would you fight over things? So I had a couple that I was working with, and they had a car worth £8,000. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't. One wanted the car and the other wanted the car. And they would not agree. Sell the car, split the money. You have a bit more, or you have, no, I want the car. And he said, I want the car. They went to court over this car. They both spent £20,000 fighting. So £40,000's been spent fighting over an £8,000 car. The judge said, sell it and split the proceeds. They got £4,000 each. Like, why? Why would you do that? That's all about, I want my day in court. I'm going to stand there and tell them how terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you've been terrible to me all my marriage, all this 20 years. I want my day. I'm going to stand up and tell the judge how terrible you are. And the judge just says, I'm not interested in listening to that. This seems like sensible to split the proceeds. I'm just going to do it. They're not interested in your emotions. They're not interested in the past or who did what. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the people in it are, they're emotionally involved, aren't they? They're fighting. They can't get out of that. But the advisors and the court are not interested in it. So I always say to people, I know you're emotional. Let's get you some help with your emotions, because I'm a big believer in really helping people in that way. Deal with the stuff that's in your mind. Deal with the pain that you're going through, and then you can come to the table in a better way. Then you're going to sit down and have a different conversation. And a lot of people that I work with actually do that. With some emotional help and actually dealing with the past, mm-hmm. they can communicate with their ex-husband, ex-wife in a better way. So I would say that if you are struggling, really work on your emotions before you spend $20,000 on lawyers, because actually, if you could get rid of some of the stuff that happened, you can come together and you might be able to have a more constructive discussion.
When does it get really catty and really nasty? Like, what is it? Is it the situations where somebody's cheated? or abuse somebody?
Domestic violence is obviously a massive one. The people that are suffering from domestic violence, there's a lot, you know, you've been suppressed. You don't have high confidence often. Your self-esteem is, you know, at the ground. So generally, they aren't fighting for every penny. They just want to get away from this situation.
Yeah.
And the other person who had been abusing them, whether it's control, whether it's financial abuse, whether it's physical, whether it's just threats, they often carry on with that. You know, there's fear in the person that's been abused. And that obviously adds a difference in the dynamics there. So you have to be careful. But I always find, you know, in those sort of situations, the person that's been abused just wants to get out. They need to be protected. They need to be housed, but they're not interested in fighting over every penny. And actually, I find that the people that have a good asset base don't fight over every penny, because actually they've got more than they need. So they can be housed and they could be comfortable. But it's the people that don't have so much. There's so much fear around what's going to happen in my future. How am I going to survive? How will I bring up these kids? Mm-hmm. How will I manage if I've got to rent forever? And all of these fears come up. And usually people deal with this stuff from a place of fear. But if you work with a financial planner, you might be able to get some answers. And if you get some knowledge around your situation and the law and everything, I just think that clarity will get rid of your fear. And then maybe the fight won't be there so much.
Mm-hmm. What about, let's talk a little bit about the impact on the kids. Now, we did talk about a little bit about that, but then in terms of your kids breaking it to them and that what they went through, I know your youngest was very young at the time. So like you said, this is all she's known really. How do you cope with their emotions?
I think that's one of the hardest things. You know, that telling the children thing is so hard. It's real then. You may have discussed it yourselves and you know it's happening. You may have told your family and a few of your friends. But that day where you know that you've got to tell your children, it just filled me with dread. But I knew that my eldest, who was around 10, knew that something was happening. And we were putting it off. We were saying, you know, she's got her exam. She had her 11 plus coming. She's got exams coming. Let's put it off. We won't tell her. We'll say daddy's working away for a bit, so she doesn't need to know. And daddy can come back and stay for the weekend. So they won't notice that something's happening. And I think we believe that we can hide these things from children, but they know. They're aware of what's going on.
Kids do sense things, don't they? They really do. And they're not, you just think, oh, what do they know? They're just kids. But they know so much more, and they just pick up on things when we think that they're not noticing.
They do notice. I think that that's the problem. People think they're kids. They don't know anything. They're not going to notice. We'll be able to hide it. And my 10-year-old knew that there was a problem. But she, being young, was so scared because she didn't know what the problem was. And I think in her head, she was like, are they splitting up? Is it divorce? What's going on with them? I don't know what's happening. I think the unknown is harder for them. When you sit down and you actually explain it, they will go through that period of being really upset, but actually they are then fine. But what we decided to do was tell them together, mm-hmm. but also to agree what was going to be said. So we decided what they will be told, and we talked about it beforehand before we called them down. And I'm a big believer in not telling the children exactly what happened. They were too young to know the detail of it. So we decided not to tell them anything around that. But, you know, we called them down the stairs, and they knew what was coming. When you say, can you come down? Daddy and I want to talk to you. They knew. They looked scared before they sat down.
Oh, bless them.
And it was the hardest thing, seeing them crumble. They just fell apart in front of you. But the little one...
They just start crying and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
They cried so much. But the 10-year-old knew in advance, but she struggled the most. The middle one, she she was really upset, and she found it hard to deal with straight away. But as soon as she did, she sort of after about an hour went, okay, I'm going off to play outside. Yeah. And you know, in your head you think things are, you know, like you've just been crying for an hour, and now everything's gone for her. She's off. And the little one just learnt to walk, and she just walked around giving tissues out.
Oh, how cute. Yeah.
Just like, have a tissue. You're all crying. Just have a tissue. So, yes, it was really tough. But actually, you know, having time with them afterwards separately, we both spent time with them individually, taking them out for a milkshake, a coffee, or whatever it was. We sat with them and said, do you have any questions? Is there something you want to know? What can I, you know, what can I do to give you information? But it's age appropriate. You have to make sure it's age appropriate. But it doesn't mean that it goes away. And I know that my eldest really struggled. She really struggled through this. And the school was brilliant. And so I would definitely say if anyone's struggling and they've got children, mm-hmm. contact the school. They were so helpful. They really sort of took it on board, and they were so nurturing. They really kept an eye on the children, and they organized play therapy through the school, which is brilliant. You know, the fact that they do that. And I learned a lot about how the children were feeling,
mm-hmm.
and just from drawings that they did, or just from, you know, the kind of things they were making, the information and their emotions came out, which was great. So I really felt supported by the school, and then even secondary school were brilliant. So for me, that was great. And we kept talking to them. But it's not to say they don't get affected, they do, but they move on. It's us that stay in that place.
Yeah. Well, thank you for just, you know, being really honest and open about your experiences and also what you do. And where can people get help if they are going through this, or if they're maybe thinking about splitting up, divorce?
I mean, I'm certainly happy to chat to anybody to give them some direction. Everybody's different, and what you want is someone to guide you in what's best for you and find out the best way for you to deal with it. So I'm happy for people to connect with me, chat to me. It's, you know, you want to be available, and there's a community of people that can help. So if I can put anybody forward to help out people that are going through it, I'm more than happy to do that. But there's also organisations like Women's Aid and local women's centres nearby. There's lots of fathers' groups where you can get support in a community way through the process as well. So look out for things like that. The other thing is really just finding people that like the same things as you. So building a community of people that are around you that may be not going through divorce, but can lift you with things that, you know, you enjoy doing. So I would definitely recommend just getting out there and trying to build a little support group or a community around you.
Because I guess the impact on mental health, it just takes a toll, right?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. And I know I suffered from depression when I was going through it. And I definitely had those dark days where you can't see anything good. Nothing is right in your life. There is no light at all. And you definitely need that right support structure to help you through, because it is such a tough thing mentally to deal with. And especially when you are a single mum, you have to drag yourself out of bed every day. Or a single dad who's looking after the children, you have to drag yourself out of bed. You've got no choice. You've got to make sure the kids get to school. You've got to make sure they've got uniform. And if you can manage the basics, don't be hard on yourself, because initially that's all you can do. They get some food. It may not be perfect, but you put some food on the table and they've eaten. But slowly things get better with support, with really working on yourself as well, giving yourself some space. So for me, lots of walking, being out in nature, not necessarily talking to somebody, but just feeling the sense of nature around me and the freedom of just being able to walk and think things through. I started running as well, lots of exercise. I kept a gratitude journal because it helped me focus on the good things in my life to start off with. But initially it was like, I've got nothing to be grateful for, or the birds are singing today, or the sky is blue, or, you know, really small things. And then slowly your mindset changes and that gratitude becomes bigger. And then you can really start moving away from feeling so dark. So there was lots of things like that that I did to help myself. But definitely get a good support network around you, because when you're having a bad day, you just need to be lifted, and you don't always need a solution. You just need to know you're supported and someone's there to listen to you. And if you can get professional help around that time as well, it's definitely quite good.
That's really good advice. And just lastly, just let people know your Insta handle or any other way that they can find you if they want to look you up and talk.
Yeah, so connect with me on Instagram. That's a good way to find me. It's Bhavna_divorceright. Cool. So come and find me on there. There's lots of useful content, but just come and connect.
Thank you, Bhavna. Thank you so much. It's been really good having you on. And thank you, everybody, for listening, for tuning into another episode of the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. So let me know your thoughts. You know, is this something that you are going through? Is it something that you considered? Like, you know, are you a single parent? mommyimperfect@gmail.com is the way to get in touch, or on Insta at Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect, or at Rena D. Annabelle. I'm going to be back next Thursday with a brand new episode. Until then, take care. Bye.